Welcome to Justice Visions, the podcast about everything that is new in the domain of transitional justice. Justice Visions is hosted at the Human Rights Center of Ghent University. For more information, visit justicevisions.org. Welcome to the Justice Visions podcast. My name is Sangeeta Yogendran, and I'm one of the researchers on the Justice Visions research project. Our regular listeners may find my voice a bit familiar from our previous episodes on Cambodia and Sri Lanka that I co-hosted earlier this year. I have two guests today that I have the pleasure of introducing, Professor Reinhard Koschler and Mrs. Ida Hoffmann, to talk today about Germany's recent official recognition of the genocide against the Herero and the Nama people of 1904 to 1908 in the country we know today as Namibia, which was under German colonial rule then. Welcome, Professor Koschler. You are a German sociologist with long research experience concerning Namibia and particularly Namibian-German memory politics. Welcome also to Mrs. Hoffmann. You are a longtime defender of the recognition of the genocide and an advocate for reparations. Thank you both for joining us today. Before we dive right into the questions, we want to contextualize Germany's recognition of the genocide in Namibia. So maybe firstly, I can ask you, Mrs. Hoffmann, could you give us some context on this genocide that Germany carried out in its former colony?
Thank you very, very much. But allow me also so that I can start, go deep down into the ground, the very troublesome issues of the German genocide against our Nama people and the Herero people of Namibia. Mm-hmm. The Nama, who chose not to surrender and let himself be seen in the German territory, will be shot until all are exterminated. And it is very, very much important that the world must know about it. And then above, it is the notorious German extermination order given by a equally infamous and brutal General Rosa von Trotha on the 22nd April 1905 against the Nama, 2nd October 1904 against the Hereros. I am honored to be part of this fight for justice because I stand for justice. To know that even what I'm always saying to myself, it is not that I read in a newspaper or heard what people have said, but I have, it comes to me myself, especially when I was opening my kindergarten, that I must be honest with myself. So that is my honor as we grapple together for the solution to the question of that notorious brutal attempt at exterminating an entire race of the people. That is one of the things that people think when we talk about extermination order and the killing, how people was killed. Therefore, it is that we are standing also for the Namas and the Hereros. We are standing for justice. Justice in the brutal face of the German genocide. Justice for the survivors of this cruelty. Justice for the descendants left in a huge vacuum, characterized by landlessness, poverty, hunger, and other upheavals. To know it is such painful.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Hoffmann. You provided us with such really important context and also where you're coming from on this journey of justice. I think as an external observer, the recognition seems to be long overdue. And at the same time, the fact that it happens now maybe is not a total surprise, with other countries like Belgium, France, the UK and the US also increasingly acknowledging their violent colonial past, and with negotiations in the German case being underway for many years already. But still, Mr. Koschler, if I can ask you, where did this decision come from and what has created the momentum now? How come, despite the UN's recognition of the genocide, which dates all the way back to 1985, Germany has only now started to use this language of genocide?
I think the German official language really skirted around that word genocide for a very long time when it came to Namibia and the German past as a colonial power in general. They even went to great lengths to avoid talking about genocide. One example is one of the very few places of memory in Berlin, which refers to the former colonies of Germany, is so-called Namibia Stone, way out in a cemetery, which even Berliners will not know offhand. And there a stone was laid to commemorate the genocide, and the district mayor, who is responsible for the area, even made sure the word genocide would not be put on this stone plate. Mm-hmm. It was only a general reference to the war or so. So they were really hunting down the word genocide for a long time.
And if I may come in here to ask, when did that start to change? When was this language of genocide adopted in the end?
Only in 2015, the German Foreign Office came around to letting me know that they would now accede to the language of genocide. And it was in a very informal way. Actually, when it happened, Ida wrote an email to me and asked me, can you please provide the press statement of the Foreign Office? And I was a little bit unsure and found out, oh, there is no press statement. It was not even a press statement. It's just during a press conference that in a very informal way, so that they let slip this information, but it helped to clear the way for the negotiations between the two governments. And these negotiations have been going on for 5.5 years now, very long time. And it seems there has been a certain rush in the end. As far as we can tell, it was not in the public view. What happened, what we can tell, is there was a certain amount of stalemate. On the one hand, I think in Namibia, everybody was sure Germany must acknowledge the genocide, ask for an apology, and provide reparations, and recognize the obligation for reparations. And the German side really tried to avoid by all means the term reparations. And on the other hand, we had the problem that most of the victim communities in Namibia felt they are not properly represented in the negotiations. So these were the two central problems. And then again, also, of course, the Germans acknowledged they would have to make some material redress. It's very, very vague terminology, mm-hmm. and just trying not to use the term reparations. And I think that is also one of the problems we are facing now. And I think that also tells you a bit about the low priority German diplomacy actually gave to this whole process, that they have not engaged with the seriousness that is actually necessary to find a equitable solution and to work seriously towards reconciliation.
And Mrs. Hoffman, for you as a longtime advocate of the recognition of this genocide, can you tell us why this recognition is so important? How have you received it? And also, how has the Namibian government reacted to this?
The first thing that I would like to inform you people is that genocide was a discussion in our family house. Mm-hmm. As my great-grandfather was always telling us how things was happening. Let me emphasize those Nama people who succumbed to the brutality of this extermination order. The survivors and their descendants, we, who are still alive today, are the victims of this inhuman cruelty. That painful chapter of our histories needs to be closed. Mm-hmm. But if it has to be closed, then it means that honesty must be in there. It has not only when they have signed the treaty, it has been finished. No, not at all. It has still continued. And then the distractions which drove the Nama and the Herer to this virtue extinction, which took place during those four brutal years of extermination under 1904-1908, is evil and immoral. To know that before I come in by the two governments, Namibia government and German government, to know that what they have done to us, they have killed. They killed our people. There's no respect in these two people, the German government and the Namibia government, with what was happening with the people of Namibia, especially the Nama and the Hereros. That is painful thing.
And what do you think should happen now, Mrs. Hoffman?
We want a place where we can sit together with the German government and we can talk. And then there the discussions will take place.
Mm-hmm.
And the Namibia government will only be the mediator. If we talk about justice, and we talk about justice, and we talk about leaders, fathers of the countries, who must show us and, you know, teach us justice with how they behave and how they are doing things. This is not justice, because all of a sudden it's the two governments who are talking now today. The majority of the Nama-speaking people are not there, the traditional leaders. The Herero traditional leaders are not there. With whom are they talking? There is no way where our government can just, together with the German government, come in and decide on how much will be paid, apology will be brought, and it is full stop, finish thing. No, our cry is that, yes, acknowledgement, the round table with that acknowledgement, that is what we want. So when you see the graveyards of the Germans, oh, such beautiful with flowers and tombstones. My God, go to where our peoples were buried. I was at Ukamas sometimes some years ago, maybe 2-3 years ago. And here all of a sudden, the German government just decided that he will just come and apologize. To whom will I apologize? No, that's not fair. We want also reparation. That means after everything, we have our discussions, we come to a peaceful conclusion that the skulls, the remains, the artifacts who are there have to come back. That we can put some of these things in the museum and the rest where we can bury them and can say to them, let your soul rest in peace. This unjust treatment, it's painful. Our campaign, our talks is for justice. And Germany must answer to the call of justice. Reparation, it's not the money who will heal the wounds of us. Money will not heal the wounds. But respect and honest discussions and justice at least will bring in some hope that we can reconcile.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Hoffman. I think you not only answered the question, but you covered so many more important things. So maybe, Mr. Koshla, I can ask you, just as Mrs. Hoffman was talking about, there's been a lot of critique, partly related to the non-involvement or the non-consultation with descendants of victims, partly because this is still not a formal or an unqualified apology. It's also not linked to a reparations policy that is seen as sufficient. Instead, some have argued that maybe this is really a case of the sinner setting the terms of their own atonement, even as a means to control the narrative, perhaps, since it's the former colonial power that decides on the wording of apologies and the scope of reparations. So what do you think this has meant, Mr. Koshler, in terms of the potential impact of this recognition?
I think one has always to see, on the one side, the situation in Namibia, and on the other side, the situation in Germany and internationally. Unfortunately, Namibia does not get so much recognition internationally or even in Germany as we would always wish it would have.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, of course, makes it easier for government policies, which I find not very salubrious to sort of slip through public scrutiny, if you like. But obviously, the idea that you make the apology one of the main issues of the negotiations was really very, very problematic. I asked even people from the Foreign Office, why could not the Parliament, the Bundestag, take a very brief resolution saying this has happened, the genocide, and in the sense of a deep apology, we are extremely sorry. And of course, there's responsibility of the German state. And we want it never happen again. We want to do anything we can to amend what has happened. And then let us talk. And of course, then the format of the talks, as Ida has already explained, would be very, very important. So this has not happened at all, but the whole issue was dragged through the negotiations. And now it's a sort of a very studied formula to avoid legal commitment. So they say it's a moral, historical, and political responsibility for Germany. They don't want to create legal obligations, and they don't want to create precedents for other issues, not only other issues about colonialism, but also issues coming out of the Second World War, like not quite resolved issues with Greece and Italy, where SS terrorists have done terrible things in many villages, just burning people in churches and razing the places to the ground, or in Poland, where we all know was one of the main arenas of the Holocaust, but of course also very, very savage repression against Polish people. All this is not quite over. So I think this is one reason why German diplomacy is acting like it does. And of course, as a citizen, I feel it's not acceptable. You know, you on the one hand, you sort of style yourself as a world champion of memory. And on the other side, you are really not forthcoming in seriously dealing with the issues. And if I think of German civil society, I think one can say there are small, very active groups, post-colonial initiatives in various places, trying to do their best. It's very, very difficult. And if I may add, we have from our side, as critical academics who have been dealing with the issue for a very long time, also said continuously for the last years while these negotiations were going on, if you reach an agreement between the two governments that does not enjoy legitimacy with the people concerned, you have not achieved anything, because it will not be reconciliation, it will not contribute towards peace, but it will, in the best of cases, continue or even exacerbate the conflicts that have been going on. And it's also part of the German responsibility. And if they say now, as our foreign minister has said, this is all up to the Namibian government, they are just sort of washing their hands, feigning innocence, but that's not seriously on. And it's certainly not what is required, I think, as we are talking about in that framework, what is required in terms of transitional justice.
If I can just pick up from there, is there anything from this German experience that could serve as a best practice? As we talked about earlier, several former colonial powers are taking similar initiative these days. So is there any lessons that can be learned from this experience, despite some of the problematic areas?
Well, I'm afraid more on the negative side. I think it so happens that our former foreign minister, the late Hans-Dietrich Genscher, who was instrumental in engineering the UN peace plan for Namibia in 1989, which led to independence, has written one of his last publications just before he passed on, Namibian Foreign Policy, and reflecting on his experience. And he said, you have to engage with people, you have to know your counterparts, and you have to be aware of their needs and of their expectations. And that is exactly what German diplomacy has failed to do in this case. One could now name instances where it has just been clear that the negotiators were not aware of the mindsets of their counterparts. It is a very, very serious shortcoming for negotiations on an issue just as genocide, not to render an apology up front.
Thank you for that, Mr. Kushler. And I think we could ask many, many more questions, but I'm going to now go to our last question, and maybe I'll direct it to you, Mrs. Hoffman. We always like to ask our interviewees where they are looking for inspiration, and maybe I can ask you what gives you hope in this area and what can we do moving forward from here?
It must be very clear that the Nama and the Herero are not in confrontation or at war with the German government. Mm-hmm. Neither the German people, but only demand justice for the wounds of the past to be healed. We, as the descendants of the survivors of the German genocide, demand, as do the facts of the genocide itself, an urgent dialogue with the German government. As I said, urgent talks, round table dialogue, mm-hmm. must be put in a motion without delay. Even if we, the technical committee, was the community, can also put in writing for the German government and say that is what we want. It is urgent talks, a round table, and our demands on the round table, that dialogue must be very clear and include, amongst others, a formal official acknowledgement of the atrocities that they have done against we, the Namas, and the Hereros. This needs to be followed by an official apology from the German government. The process of repatriation of all human remains of Namibia origin still kept in the German custody now must be duly and fully completed. Reparation for damages must be done. It must be done.
Do you have any final reflections about what needs to happen next in this process?
For me, there is a little bit of hope when I think about the trajectory German memory dealing with a dire past. Has come. There was much resistance about acknowledging even the Holocaust in the 50s and even in the 60s. It took courageous people to single-handedly change that to some extent. So there were various stages of acknowledging victim groups, also beside the Jews, like the Sinti and Roma, the gay people, and forced laborers, and so forth. So my faint hope is that on that trajectory, we will reach a point where there is also a equitable and dignified way of acknowledging the responsibility coming from the colonial past. But I think it will be long haul still, and I think we'll have to continue. And to add, I think you are quite right. There is also a certain movement in various other countries of Europe, including at the moment, importantly, Belgium. I would mention that in terms of finding new ways of confronting this colonial past, of really getting serious about returning stolen objects of art, and most of the colonially acquired art has been stolen. There's no doubt about that. And I think in bits and pieces we are getting there, but these bits and pieces and this long process is set against the urgency which you feel from Ida's words and from the situation in Namibia. I think that we should also always keep in mind, on the one side, a very long and drawn out process, and on the other side, a real serious urgency.
Thank you for that, Mr. Kirschler. As we are approaching the end of our podcast season, I want to thank you both, Mrs. Hoffman and Mr. Kirschler, for sharing your insights, your pain, and your quest for justice and to make a difference. And also, I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. As always, for our audience, feel free to reach out to us with suggestions for topics you'd like to hear. In our next season, we'll be doing something slightly different, and we'll really enter into a dialogue between theorists and practitioners regarding some of the core notions of transitional justice. But for now, I want to thank you both again, Mrs. Hoffman and Mr. Kirschler, and we look forward to seeing you next season. This was Justice Visions. To re-listen to this episode or to browse our archive, visit our website, justicevisions.org, or subscribe now via Spotify or Apple Music. Justice Visions is made possible through generous funding of the European Research Council.